It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, and also the blog at ClutchCityCR. Now, joining us today after two games into this Rockets-Lakers second round series, joining us to gain a better understanding of some of the things that we've seen across these first couple Rockets-Lakers games is our good friend Ali Kambijani of The Athletic and the creator and founder of Rockets Film Room on YouTube. How's it going, Ali Khan?
Good. Thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely, man. I enjoy bringing you on the show because when I get you on here, not only do I learn more about basketball, but our listeners learn more about basketball. And I feel like I just become a more intelligent person after talking hoops with you because you are one of the brightest minds when it comes to not just Rockets basketball, but basketball as a whole. So let's just, without any further ado, I want to jump directly into this. And we talked a bit about this before hitting the record button, but coming into this series, I spoke with Tim, the founder of B-Ball Index, and he was convinced that the Lakers would be best served with two bigs on the floor. But after two games into the series, it looks like AD at the five might be the way to go for them to find success. What have you noticed about the Lakers' rotation so far in regards to their big versus quote-unquote small lineup with AD at the five?
I understand the rationale for wanting to play big. I think, in theory, it's a great idea. You're having one big who's kind of running as a rim protector, and you can have a secondary big who's playing high and on James, kind of deterring the drive. And with that length that all three of the Lakers bigs have, and Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis, and JaVale McGee, you really are taking away the opportunity or a big sizable driving lane for James Harden if the rotations are done correctly. But what's been interesting is, and you saw this in the first game, in the first few pick and rolls or the first few isolation possessions, James Harden was like, you know what? Let's get the switch. I want LeBron on me. Or you know what? Let's get the switch. I want Anthony Davis on me. And that's not just by accident. That's just James Harden trying to send the message. It's neither of those things. It's in the game plan. You want to take one of their best weak side defenders away from the weak side. You want to take Anthony Davis, who's arguably their best help defender, and put him in on top on James and let James get by him. And once you get by him, you only have JaVale McGee at the rim, and then you have three other guys who aren't as scary to you when you're attacking the paint. And so we're seeing a lot more of that, and I think you saw that a lot, especially last night. James kind of went back to it late in the first half and into the second. One thing I will say is I think the Rockets have figured out what to do when it comes to playing against the two big lineup for the Lakers. They're kind of changing up their spacing and their alignment, and what I mean by that is, you think that when the Rockets are running transition, they're just kind of trying to fill the corners, fill the slot, but they're purposely going to where they're supposed to go. Eric is going to where he's supposed to go in the field. PJ Tucker is going to the corner where he needs to. All the guys are positioned exactly where they're supposed to be because that's how you counter the Lakers. You force the big to be as far away from the paint as you can and far away from the help side as you can. So then James Harden has all that space to see the whole floor and attack. That's why yesterday he was more stationed in the middle of the floor versus the sides, especially when they were playing against the two bigs, because he has a lot. His vision is a lot better when he can see the whole floor and dictate where the secondary traps are coming from.
So when it comes to getting that desired alignment, which is something that I brought to the attention of Tim, explaining that seemingly for anybody who's watched any amount of regular Rockets basketball, you'll see on a nightly basis James Harden kind of bring the ball up, and he spends sometimes that first 4 to 5 seconds once he crosses the half court line kind of directing traffic, moving, pointing, hey, you go here, you move here, and that's him trying to create the desired alignment that he wants before attacking the defense. Now, is that strictly a James Harden thing, or is it it a bit, you know, on the players themselves, the Tuckers, the Gordons, to see, you know, what player is on them. Say, you know, if Tucker finds himself with AD as his defender, you know, when he goes to line up in the corner, does he know to then move to another part of the court, or is he just looking for instruction from James while all of that is developing?
So they know, they watch film after, especially in the postseason, they watch film after every postseason game, and James in the film study or in the film room when they're all together kind of points out, hey, this is what I want. And Russ will do the same thing in terms of what he wants. And so those 4 to 5 seconds, you're absolutely right. James dictates where everybody is going to be. And the reason is because he prefers, and I've said this many times on Twitter, so for those who don't understand what I'm trying to break it down for you guys. The Rockets, besides James Harden, will have 4 other players on the court. And with the small ball, they're going to have 5 total shooters on the court, usually if Russ is not in there. So let's say you have Russ not in there and it's 4 other shooters. Well, the way James likes it is that he likes one shooter in that corner next to him. So that's probably going to be PJ Tucker. And what that does is when he's in that corner –
So one shooter in the strong side, in the strong side corner, correct?
Yeah, exactly. When you have a shooter in that strong side corner, that defender there, whoever it is, if it's a Lakers big probably, they can't help off. Because if you help off, he's shooting a really good percentage from 3 this series. He's going to knock one down. So that basically neutralizes that area of the court. On the opposite side, on that weak side, you're going to have 3 shooters. And why James likes 3 on one side and 1 on the other is because the side he's on, especially the side with the one shooter, there's all that open space. There's a whole open gap that's there for him to be able to attack and be able to do a lot of different things and improvise to get to the paint. The purpose is if you are running a 2-2 alignment, which means 2 shooters on both sides, you're making it easier for the defense to be able to help early. And James doesn't like that because if you're helping early, it's much harder for him to get past that early help and get to the paint. But if it's 3-1 alignment, you're making it much more difficult for the defense to help on James. It's much easier for him to get to the paint. And he draws that help, but it's a late help. And what the late help means, James, by the time he's driving to the paint, he knows where everybody is. And he can calculate really quickly, well, if the low man is not there rotating to the rim, I have a layup. Well, if they did rotate over, I see there's 3 shooters on the weak side. Somebody's likely setting a flare screen. I can pass to the corner. There's all these different things going on in James' head that he already knows, which is why when coach says it, when James says it, they've seen every defense. They know where each player wants to be. It's just a matter of making sure they can execute that and knock down their shots. But I hope that explanation to you did make sense.
I mean, it actually made great sense to me, and I'm actually over here smiling a little bit because I remember when you posed the question not long ago on Twitter, and you dropped in and I believe it was sometime during the OKC series, either just before or just, you know, in the middle of the series, you dropped a screenshot or a short video on Twitter of a play involving Mike Muscala and the Oklahoma City Thunder defense in transition, and you asked everybody, you were like, hey, so what do you see going on in this play? And I described it exactly as you just did as far as the 3-1 alignment is concerned and the whole reasoning behind why James wants PJ Tucker in the corner so that the defender doesn't sag off of him. And I remember that was my answer, and I parsed back through your liked tweets to see who got the answer right. I was the only one, so I'm gonna take my trophy away from this conversation. that's so interesting. Yeah. You say that because one of the other things that you brought up is that James doesn't like passing out to the top of the key, and he prefers to be, you know, make that pass to the weak side corner. What's the reasoning behind that? Is it because of just the way that alignment favors him? Is it because of his own personal tendencies, or what's the reasoning behind, you know, where he likes to make those passes as he's, you know, penetrating and breaking down the defense?
No, that's a fantastic question. When defenses are preparing to play James Harden, and this goes back into how the whole shading James Harden, taking away his left-hand defense actually started, it's all about the analytics. It's all about what are James Harden's preferences. We know if James Harden's starting on the right side and he's going left, we know where his passes usually go to. Teams have the data for that. And 2 seasons ago, especially in that 2018 MVP season, you know, the one place where James Harden has improved since then, especially, has been being a more self-aware passer. He's always been a gifted passer and one of the best passers in the league. But in terms of his recognition on where to pass to, he's improved on that. When the Bucks started that scheme of kind of taking away his left hand, they were leaving that hole above the break area. So above the break means top of the key. They were leaving that whole area open. So whichever shooter was there had an open shot, essentially. They took away both corners. They took away that wing with Giannis. And that whole top of the key area was open if James Harden passed across his body. Well, if you pay attention this season, especially these last two games against the Lakers, the way they're playing defense, they're taking away his preferences. They're making those rotations crisp. And the reason why they look crisp is because they're making sure that the weak side defenders for the Lakers don't have to do as tough of a job in terms of rotations. They're going to where they need to go to. And that's leaving the top of the key open. If you go back and watch that third quarter run that the Rockets went on, you'll notice a lot of the threes, yes, there were some in the corner, but a lot of them were on the top of the key in the wings. And that's not by mistake. James is seeing what the defense is doing, and he's quickly adjusting. He's not making the same mistake twice. So when you try to take away his preferences, he realizes that. And he's going to do what he can to get to find the open shot wherever they are. And so you're seeing Eric, Daniel House, two guys who are great shooters from the top of the key wing area, get a lot more open looks. And with Daniel House making a lot of his threes, especially yesterday, that's gonna spread out the defense even more and be able to give more driving space for James to attack the paint, penetrate, and do what he does.
I find this entire matchup just, you know, when it comes to the X's and O's between two teams that are so philosophically different in the Lakers and Rockets, I find this matchup so fascinating. And we're going to keep talking about it here in just a moment because we absolutely need to discuss the Russell Westbrook dilemma and kind of what's going on there, the spacing for the Rockets when he's out there on the court, some potential rotation guys, and how, you know, I personally think we should see Ben McLemore and Austin Rivers utilized. And we'll get more on that here in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at RockAuto.com. Traditional chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, whereas RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they are reliably low. They always offer the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear, kind of like what airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even brand new carpet. So whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, you can get everything you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. And best of all, when you support RockAuto.com, you're supporting a family business that's been serving auto parts customers online for over 20 years. And as mentioned, the prices, they're always reliably low, and they're the exact same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why would you want to spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure, this is the important part, do me a favor, be sure to write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. And we're back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. If you're not already doing so, if you appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, the speculation, the analysis, the guest voices like our special guest, Ali Kambijani, that we have on right now, do me a favor, hit the subscribe button on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. I would sincerely appreciate it. So chatting with Ali Kambijani right now, Ali Kamb, one thing that we have to discuss that is, you know, probably at the forefront of everybody's mind is just how, I'm sorry, terrible Russell Westbrook played in game two. It was, and I am far from a Westbrook apologist, but even I was trying to stick up for him at halftime, trying to kind of explain to listeners during our halftime show some of the elements that he brings to the game that aren't necessarily scoring. But when you look at his, you know, the stat line to finish the night, you know, 7 attempted threes, only hit one of them, 7 turnovers on the evening, just a really rough night all around for Russell Westbrook. And I think a lot of that was because of the zone defense that we saw to the Lakers and the fact that at times they were not even guarding him. They were giving him the Lou Dort special on defense. So I just want to pick your brain, and what is your immediate reaction to, one, just the differences, obviously, between game one and game two and how they defended Russ, but how the Rockets and specifically Russ can overcome that zone defense the Lakers were using?
No, that's a great question. You know, for me, the biggest thing about Russ last night that I think cost the Rockets the game was that stretch to end the third and to start the fourth. He picked up his fifth foul on that charge by Rajon Rondo. I think that was the biggest play of the game.
Well, we need to clarify, it was apparently a loose ball foul.
Yeah, see, I thought it was a charge too. But
I mean, I would have been okay with a charge call because that's what it probably should have been, but that's neither here nor there. We won't get into the Scott Foster beef right now, but that's another conversation for another time. So anyways, fifth foul.
Yeah, and so, you know, when it comes to the situation where Russ picks up his fifth, he's very aggressive and physical on defense. When he's you know, paying attention to assignment and kind of involved, he likes to play the passing lanes, do things like that. So he's prone to fouls. And so when you pick up his fifth foul, he can't be as aggressive as he needs to be. So there was a little huddle that occurred, and I was watching through TV, and I remember LeBron saying five fouls. Okay. Like Rajon, I think Frank Vogel relates to Rajon, and Rajon went to the whole group and said, "Oh, hey, five fouls for Russ." And so who would have known? Next possession to end the quarter. What does LeBron do? Seek out Russ, get the switch. Russ is on LeBron. LeBron takes him inside, easy basket. Fourth quarter, what happens here? Every possession, they're attacking Russ, getting inside, scoring. And you know, it was really frustrating. I asked Coach D'Antoni about this after the game. I said, you know, usually they would switch that. And they started each possession by hiding Russ in the corner. But by the end of the possession, he was switched on to LeBron. So what happened there? Well, usually what occurs is if a player has foul trouble or you don't want them to switch onto the opposing team's best isolation player, you hide them in the corner. And each time that player is asking for a screen to get the poor defender matched up on him, you send somebody else. The Rockets didn't do that. Russ just kind of followed Caruso every possession to the top of the key, and nobody else, you know, went with Caruso instead. And I think that was a very big stretch because the Lakers were down multiple points. They came back and took that 98-94 lead heading to that timeout. But by then, LeBron had so much momentum. He had a dunk. He had the three. I mean, he just started getting going. And when that happens, and when the Lakers are feeling all that momentum in transition, it's really hard to stop them. So before we kind of get into everything, I kind of want to make that clear. I think the biggest issue yesterday was Russ picking the five fouls and not being able to be aggressive. But the reason I bring all this up, people on Twitter are saying, why aren't they benching Russ? You are not going to bench your second best and second most important player in the series. You don't do that. You're going to give him every chance to be successful. He was incredibly effective as a rebounder yesterday. To me, he was fighting for boards. He got multiple offensive rebounds, second chances. He was trying to get the defensive rebounding. That was actually the reason why Coach D'Antoni brought him in for Daniel House in that middle part of the fourth quarter, was because they gave up a few offensive rebounds and they didn't secure the defensive rebound correctly. So he brought Russ back in, and that wasn't an issue. So I think when you look at the positives and why Russ was playing and what you need to do, you first have to understand you're never going to bench your second most important and your best player. And he provides so many other things for you that it's really hard to replace if he's on the bench.
I think that's essentially basically the same argument that I was making during halftime, was saying, look, you know, the Rockets, you know, they cannot replicate what Russ brings to the court. And you know, when it comes to certain players, sometimes you take the good with the bad. And unfortunately, you know, it just felt like some of the bad outweighed the good that he brought to the table in game two. Unfortunately, you know, looking at those seven turnovers, the seven attempted threes, I know one of them went in, so six misses. And it just seems that kind of runs counter to everything that we saw, that the transformation that Russ kind of underwent back pre-hiatus, you know, in the January, February mark of the season, where we were seeing him be the most efficient version of himself. And talking about this zone defense that the Lakers were running, it's very akin to some of the defenses that we saw used back during the regular season before the hiatus, you know, took place, before everything was shut down. And where we saw Russ really thrive against some of those defenses, right, was catching the ball and immediately, you know, going off the bounce and driving hard towards the rim. And instead, it felt like, and this is kind of where my main takeaway from the game was, it felt like he wasn't being decisive out there. It felt like he was, you know, a half step behind or a half second behind on what his decision making was going to be, almost to the point where he was doubting mm-hmm. what he was supposed to be doing out there. And then it felt like he was falling into the trap of, you know, getting up those 3-point shots. He had 3 3-pointers in the fourth quarter, which is just, it's very uncharacteristic. He hasn't shot more than 6 3-pointers in a game since January. And so I want to know, just, you know, in that post game, did it seem like Russ kind of understood, you know, where, you know, what went wrong, and that he, you know, needs to revisit some of that film and figure out how to best attack these defenses again?
Well, so yeah, you know, it's a great question. And one thing I've learned about Russ in my first season covering him is that when he goes through a loss, it's really hard to talk to him, as I mean, we've come to know, but if you ask him a good basketball question, he's going to give you a good response. And so I asked him yesterday, especially because in the fourth quarter, they were leaving him open on the wing. Usually when that happens, he sets himself up in the middle of the floor and kind of draws that help defense so he can kind of maneuver and find the shooter. But yesterday, he didn't do what he usually does. He kind of accepted their invitation of just spotting up instead of driving as usual. And then that's that whole comment that's kind of been making the rounds where he said, I need to go back and watch the film. I was just running around, all those things like that. I think he knows. He and James talked last night, according to James today at practice, about what they both need to do to be successful. I think Coach D'Antoni kind of has an idea after yesterday, kind of just talk, and probably will talk to both of them, say, hey, how do you feel about what we should do, things like that. I think it'll be fine for tomorrow. You know, Coach said today that it's kind of like a desperation move when you go to a zone. But I think it's very effective by the Lakers. They did a great job of it. They had three smalls on the top of the at the top of the key, taking away the threes, and they had two bigs kind of taking away the paint. So I think the way you have to attack a zone if you're Russ is that you give the Russ at the top of the key and you have a small set of screen for him. And I think this goes into kind of what you started the show by saying is that we need to see more Ben McLemore. And I understand the hesitation of playing Ben McLemore. You kind of don't want him to match LeBron James minutes because LeBron will just pick on him on switches. But you can neutralize that defensively. I think Ben plays with a lot of energy where it won't be as effective as you think it could be. But in terms of offensively against the zone, if you have a small set of screen for Russ inside the paint, so this is not something that's like at the top of the key, but like you go a little bit inside and he sets a screen, the small can pop back out and he can catch the ball much easier and shoot a three. And if you want a good visual for this, think about when in the first round where we had that Jeff Green 5-1 inverted pick and roll with James Harden, where James Harden was setting the screen as a small. Jeff Green was a ball handler, and the whole entire purpose was that, well, if Jeff Green can get a lane, he can go inside and score. But usually it was to get James Harden some open space to go and catch the ball at the perimeter. And sometimes he had some open catch and shoot threes. Well, that's the same logic here. If you have a small set the screen for Russ, you're allowing a shooter – to be able to set the screen, pop to their perimeter, and Russ has a pass right there open, ready to go. So I think, you know, you're always going to see Russ play minutes with Eric Gordon. That's somebody we can see doing it. You're always going to see minutes, I think, now with Ben McLemore. That's what you're going to see. But, you know, that's one strategy I think is going to be really effective. I think they're going to pair Ben and Russ a lot more, especially in those AD-only minutes late in the first and you know, halfway through the second. And, you know, Eric Gordon's probably going to have a lot more ball handling responsibility. The way they're kind of overloading away towards the shooters, you have a lot of different things you can do to attack that zone just by having a specific shooter in the middle or maybe even having Russ in the middle as well. So there are different tactics and schematic adjustments you'll probably see from the Rockets tomorrow, starting with who they play alongside Russ and kind of what they use with those shooters. You want to have those shooters adjacent to somebody they're playing off of like that, because if the shooters are adjacent, that spreads that wall, the initial 3-2 wall, so far wide where you can have that person in the middle be a good decision maker in attack.
Excellently put. As always, I'm always so fascinated to hear you kind of break down these things, and I'm always even more excited than to watch it actually play out in real time and watch some of these adjustments take place in the game. So that's absolutely something I'm looking forward to seeing, is Russell Westbrook and kind of using that small guard screen to get himself going a little bit more. And it does kind of sound like just putting the ball in Russ's hands, you know, is a way to potentially kind of get him going. I wonder if we're also going to see, you know, Russ and Harden execute that same pick and roll, which we've seen from time, you know, time and time again, is, you know, those two guys kind of run that pick and roll, right? That, as you mentioned, like not at the top, not above the break, but just, you know, a little bit further inside, like that inverted 1-5 pick and roll with Jeff Green. And speaking of Jeff Green, he and a couple other players are some guys that I want to talk about coming up here in our final segment. But first, a quick message from our friends over at DoorDash. It's time now more than ever to continue supporting the restaurants in your community safely. And that's the key word, is safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage right now more than ever. And you can support your favorite restaurants with DoorDash. It's the app that brings you the food that you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. You open the app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with their new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurant, and your food will be left right at your door. And right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off your order and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. So one more time, $5 off, $5 off your very first order with DoorDash when you use promo code LOCKEDONNBA. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for all things Houston Rockets basketball. To stay up to date with the show, be sure to follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin and, of course, the show at Locked On Rockets. Now, for this final segment, I want to, you know, touch base on, we were just talking about it a moment ago, the end of segment two, but Jeff Green and that inverted 1-5 pick and roll that we saw during some of that Oklahoma City Thunder series. And Ali Khan, I want to know that kind of, we saw them kind of going away from that at the end of the Thunder series. And we also haven't seen, you know, really any of that here in this Lakers series. And I want to know why the Rockets have gone away from that, because it seems so effective. And especially, you know, when we're seeing all these, you know, flash traps and double teams on James Harden, I would think that, you know, maybe taking the ball out of his hands and having a guy like Jeff Green, you know, instigating that 1-5 pick and roll might be really useful as a creative way to kind of beat some of those traps. But I want to kind of, you know, figure out where your mind is at on that topic.
So there's I asked Coach D'Antoni this question a few days ago because I was also interested in learning, you know, do they like going straight into isolation? And what I mean by that is no screens, no picks, nothing like that. Just strictly go into where the position you're supposed to be with spacing and let James Harden go one-on-one. Or do they like to have an initial pick or kind of run one of their little side plays they like to do? And he said that his players actually like to go straight into isolation, which was very interesting. And there are advantages to that. One advantage is you're not inviting a double team. And what the Lakers are doing, which I think the Rockets will start to exploit more tomorrow, is instead of a screen being set where you're kind of inviting that defender who was defending that screener to come double, the double team has to come from somewhere else in the court, if that makes sense. And as James Harden, without the person screening, can see where that's coming from, quickly diagnose it, and make the pass where it needs to go. I will say this, and the reason why I think the Lakers were so effective yesterday with their double teaming and their trapping is because they're doing a great job of making it so random of where they're coming from. Sometimes it's coming from the adjacent wing. Sometimes it's coming from the opposite corner. Sometimes it's coming from right next door in the strong side corner. So they're mixing up the coverages of where they're sending that double team and trap from, and that's making it difficult on James, because if he doesn't have if they're quickly sending it, he doesn't have a good idea really quickly of kind of how to telegraph that. And so I think you're going to see some adjustments moving forward, you know, in terms of countering that. But to your point about Jeff Green, they are running a couple Jeff Green actions with James Harden, but it's not your normal pick and roll. It's more of a dribble handoff situation. So you're seeing a set called delay, and it's a special type of three-man kind of offensive set where you have a screener, you have Jeff Green who's handling the ball at the five at the top of the key, and James Harden coming off of two screens, and Jeff is rolling or popping back out. But you're seeing that more used this series compared to last series, where they wanted to use Jeff Green's ability as a ball handler to help free up James. In this situation, you don't need to run a lot of 5-1 inverted pick and roll, because they're not pressuring James on the ball as much as they were in that Oklahoma City's with Lou Dort. You don't need to free up James. It's much easier, in my humble opinion, to free up James from the Lakers perimeter defenders than it was with Oklahoma City. And so when that happens, you have to use Jeff Green differently. I think what we'll see more is of Harden and Jeff Green being the screener and kind of having him roll to the rim. But I think in terms of inverted, it's, you're not likely going to see it just because you don't have to use it as much, because James is not being as pressured as much when he has the ball or when he doesn't have the ball.
One of the other areas too that kind of stood out to me in that game too, and was kind of a stark contrast to game one, is it felt like the Lakers' rotations were a lot more crisp in that game defensively, and you know, just really closing out hard on the shooters. And I think we saw, especially, and this was the issue with the the Russell Westbrook only minutes where he was lined up alongside Austin Rivers, we saw a lot of indecision in those lineups where Russ would drive and then kick, and then Rivers would, you know, not shoot, and then he would drive and then kick. And we saw some turnovers out of those lineups. And I think that kind of is the main proponent for why I feel, and why many others feel, that with Russ, you need to line him up with the shooters. But with Austin Rivers, you know, you can still have him be effective in the Harden only minutes, because then if Rivers decides to make that, you know, make that decision to drive again, and you kind of try to dribble, penetrate, and break down the defense a second time after an initial action by James Harden, or as the primary action on a possession, you've still got four shooters surrounding Rivers, as opposed to when it's Russ and Rivers out there in the Russ only minutes, then you're essentially playing with only three shooters, and then you've still got the non-shooter in Russ out there, which is causing issues. Am I wrong in seeing this, or am I analyzing this wrong, or do you kind of agree with that sentiment?
No, I think I agree with that. And when it comes to the whole, like, that situation with the traps, they got open shots. They just passed on them, like you said. And I think we saw a couple of changes in the alignment in that second half, and I think we're going to see that more. Normally, Coach D'Antoni likes to have Russ next to James Harden, and we all know why, because Russ can be serving as an outlet, go 4-on-3, attack the basket going downhill, or, you know, find the shooter in the corners. Yesterday, the way they were playing him was really interesting. There were some possessions where they had Eric Gordon adjacent to James Harden instead of Russ, and so since they're doubling with the defender in the opposite corner, what that happens is you have that weak side corner open. So if Eric and PJ are on the same side together, who are you going to help off of? Because essentially that one defender who's left taking on two shooters has to make a decision of who they need to help on. And it's a long recovery back to that defender who was kind of helping double team and camping in the paint. So you're seeing kind of those adjustments where Coach D'Antoni is shuffling where his players need to be. And I think it's gonna make it easier on whoever that person is facilitating to make an easy decision. What the Lakers are doing, they're sending all the, like I said earlier, these random traps because they want to make it harder for whoever that ball handler is going to be after James passes out to have to make a tough decision. But if you make it so that two shooters, your best shooters from their best positions, Eric in the slot and PJ in the corner, are both on the same side. If it's Jeff Green, if it's Russell Westbrook, whoever it is catching in the middle of the floor, that's an easy decision, an easy pass. All they have to do is find whoever the defender is not covering, and you have an easy three. And so I think you're going to see a lot more of that by Coach, just to kind of put his players in the best position spacing-wise, so whoever catches off the outlet can make an easier decision. The Lakers did a great job yesterday of making a decision much tougher. Jeff Green likes to make a one simple skip pass to the corner. He doesn't like to make those fancy passes or kind of take one or two dribbles. He can do it if he needs to, but he likes to make quick skip passes. Russell Westbrook, he's either tunnel vision straight to the rim, or he's has a second eye to the left side of the court, and he can make a pass to the left corner. So I think if you can make it easier on those guys to be able to make easier decisions, that's really going to help the Rockets offense thrive even more.
One area that I want to talk about before we wrap this thing up, I've got a couple more questions in here, and I want to talk kind of defensively first. So I made this wild claim, and I want to get your opinion on it, that, you know, we saw the Lakers kind of using a defender as like almost like a free safety in this game to, you know, kind of roam the court and, you know, at times be, you know, part of that flash double and, you know, basically leaving Russell Westbrook wide open. And I was kind of racking my brain thinking, how can the Rockets make life harder for LeBron and Anthony Davis? And I had this wild idea that at least in the minutes where Rajon Rondo is out there, potentially you could use Russell Westbrook as that kind of free safety defender and leave Rondo open as kind of the Lou Dort style defense, right? And in my mind, it solved two problems. One, it gives Russ something active to do defensively, because we know that his weakness as a defender is when he's off ball, when he gets caught, you know, ball watching or just not paying attention and, you know, loses track of his man. versus if you give him something active to do defensively, like actively going to flash double LeBron or AD in the post or something like that to just at least make them a bit more uncomfortable. You can kind of afford that because the Rockets, the rest of the four guys on the court tend to be so quick with their rotations that they should be able to get back in time to cover Rondo by the time the ball makes its way back to him, or at least, you know, the rotations around the rest of the court. So is that a crazy idea, or do you think that's something that might have a little bit of basis in reality?
You know, the biggest thing with me and Russ is that, you know, if you watch his defense yesterday, there was times where he was the low man. And what that means is in the Rockets defense, when you're switching, that low man is the first person to kind of rotate over instead of cascade of rotations. And the low man is also, when they're trying to double team the post, he's supposed to block out one of the bigs, and JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard from kind of getting position. The Lakers had a lot of open passing windows for lobs that they did not take in that first quarter. And it was usually because Russ was the low man, and he just wasn't doing a great job of being aware of where those bigs were. And so I understand what you're trying to say. I wanted to put that out there just for people to understand, like, why I may disagree with that. But I do say that Russ is incredible at diagnosing plays, which is why that five fouls yesterday was very, very much of an issue, because he likes to gamble. He takes calculated risks and went to jump passing lanes and went to be aggressive and strip and do things. He's very quick with his hands, which are like a lot of Rockets defenders, like James Harden and Robert Covington. And so I think with Russ, you have to put him in position where it's quick, where he's able to make decisions quickly. And if he can do that, maybe in that situation, like you said, that he can be successful.
Now, and the other question that I did have, and you kind of gently brushed on the topic here a moment ago, but one thing that really has surprised me through these first two games is just the lack of overall, like, over the top play, as well as we're not really seeing a lot of slipping screens by the Lakers, which is something, you know, that's what we like to champion. Anybody who's heard me or you, or shout out to Nekes Duncan, you know, just talking about what's the best way to beat a switching defense is by slipping screens. And we really haven't seen a lot of that through these first two games.
Yeah. You know, the biggest thing about Anthony Davis, and if you're a Rockets fan and who hasn't watched a lot of Lakers basketball this year, you're going to start to realize this. He likes to establish rhythm by going on the move. And what I mean by that is he doesn't like standing still. He doesn't like standing on his feet. He likes standing on his toes. He's always constantly moving, constantly diving, constantly coming off of screens and pin downs and getting in positions where he wants to go. It's very similar kind of to Kevin Durant in that 2018 series, where the Warriors kind of just got him off a quick pin down, a quick action, got him in the position where he wants to go to and go one-on-one. Well, Anthony Davis is making his shots. And, you know, you tip your cap if you're P.J. Tucker or Robert Covington, those tough shots he's making yesterday. But they're also kind of doing their best to limit his movement. And so I think you have to give a credit. You have to give credit to the Rockets defense for doing a great job. I was looking at a lot of the different Lakers Twitter, and an individual from Lakers Twitter posted that Anthony Davis went 7 of 10 on isolations against P.J. Tucker yesterday. And if that happens, P.J.'s doing a great job of kind of taking away pre-catch from where he wants to be. And what I mean by that is when you're defending a big, and if, especially when you're fronting, you're trying to sit on the big's thighs, and you're trying to take away anything in terms of movement for that big. And once that pass is made, you're trying to push the back as much as you can, so that offensive player, the big, has to jump even further out towards the perimeter. And PJ does such a great job with that. But like I said, you have to tip your cap to Anthony Davis. But to answer your question, they're doing a great job of kind of being physical with the screens and the slips. The Rockets have a principle on their defense of guiding the switch. And what that means is when they're getting ready to switch the ball, they have to physically touch the defender and switch it to somebody else, to their teammate. And they did a great job of that in game one. In game two, I think it was really hard for them to establish a rhythm, especially with the whistle early on for PJ when he picked up those two early fouls, to kind of get an idea of, are they going to be able to be physical or things like that. But if they can establish a physicality defensively with their switches and how they guide it, that's really going to give the Rockets the advantage of being able to be physical with AD, because he's always on the move. So you have to be physical. And if you can get away with it, you're taking him away from the preferred spots he wants to be.
Yeah, just kind of getting your body into him a little bit, bumping him off his spots, just anything to make him uncomfortable. And I think we did see a lot of that in game one and not nearly as much in game two, as you mentioned, you know, with the bit of a softer whistle at times, going the Rockets, or against the Rockets, I should say. Well, I think that kind of covers all of our ground for today's show. Alikhan, I really appreciate you stopping by. Give us a chance, where can we find, your content at? Go ahead and plug your channels.
Yeah. I mean, the best place is to follow me on Twitter at Rockets_Insider. Or if you go to YouTube, just type in Rockets Film Room. You'll find my account there as well. Just trying to post as much videos as I can, trying to post a lot of tweets as I can to kind of help you guys better understand the game. But yeah, just trying to push those two right now.
Absolutely, man. Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time to be here today with us. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate you, man.
All right. For today's episode, that's going to do it. So as always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.